the things that they did to like engage creatively, honestly, were destructive for others in order to limit the power that like some folks would have in the church to see their own sort of power like increase. And that, dependent on the type of tradition you grew up with in the Black church, that could mean LGBTQ folks, it could mean women, it could be people who had disabilities, those who are, you know, neurodivergent, like the list goes on, children, elders, it just depends. But yeah, there are some people whose imagination was limited, and in those limitations, they try to pass things off to others.
So, what is it that you love about being Black?
That's a great question, Nanny Kena. I love being Black because I'm different from everybody else. And the second reason, because Black people can do anything they set their minds to.
What I like about being Black is just freaking amazing. We are amazing.
Every day is a good day for breathing.
My favorite part about being Black is the originality.
I love being Black because I can put my hair into different shapes and sizes, and nobody can ever tell me how my hair can be.
I do like the food.
When people say Black girl magic, that's for real. That ain't just because we just want to say that. It's real. We magic.
We are so unique in everything that we know.
Go ahead, say it. Please say it.
Please say black.
Please say black.
As I always was Black.
I want y'all to be excited. I feel super, super, super honored. I'm just going to say that I have Alicia Crosby, and it's so funny, but maybe not funny, because this is someone who, like, I don't even know when we, like, it was like a virtual exchange, but then we just started like telling each other jokes on the internet, and it's just grown into this rich kinship, and I feel so honored. So let me just go through just why you are somebody who people should be listening to and paying attention to, because they don't get you texting them funny jokes, but I do. But I think y'all should be listening to this, because Alicia is the host of Talking to People I Know podcast, all right? And you are also the creator of an amazing Etsy shop. I actually have, I meant to show you my coffee cup called Act Out Gear. Alicia, you are with the people.
Hey, people. Hey, Kena.
Okay, did I leave out anything when it came to your introduction?
Oh, Lord. I mean, I just, y'all, I do a lot of things during the course of my day. So, I mean, in addition to like my forthcoming podcast and my Etsy shop, I am a writer, speaker, avid tweeter. I'm the community cultivation curator for Evolving Faith Conference. I do a lot. I'm out here. And I'm like super excited to be with you, y'all. I'm also like that friend who is like really good at sending like memes and TikToks, which is like a pretty vital part of like me and Kena's relationship, because I just be sending like random ass stuff to Kena's phone. Like, sis, here you go.
You the plug. I don't even be knowing. I don't be knowing the things. The next segment is called What's the Blackest Thing You've Done Lately? You already know the blackest thing I did, because the blackest thing I did today was how to check somebody in the gas station.
Yes. So the blackest thing I've done lately is actually a communal Black thing. So I was on the phone with my auntie the other day, and we were talking about hair for my upcoming wedding. And I shared my hair with her, and my auntie was like, oh, I was thinking about having similar hair. I was like, but you need to find a new hairstyle, because why did my 60-something-year-old aunt and I have very similar visions for the hair we were going to have, which is also the same vision that my best friend / maid of honor had. So the blackest thing I've done lately is told these two Black women that they needed to find new visions for their Black hair, because this is my hair.
Y'all
this is
ain't
my
about to do
hair.
It.
and it's crochet, so it's like extra black, and it's being flown in from London. I found, so wait, we got off the blackness. So I found the hair on Instagram.
Wait, what did you?
You asked.
You put in the search box, sis.
So what happened was, I don't know how this happened, but I saw somebody with like this dope hair. I was like, yeah, that hair looks real nice. So I go click on it. And then, you know, how, like Instagram be like, oh, look at this business. Look at this business. And I was like, let me see what this business is about. And so it is a hair shop that specializes in like crochets, like synthetic crochets that is just like real dope. And they have like a whole product line of like natural pattern hair. So it's like almost all of it is like coily, kinky, or curly. And I was like, And so I went on like YouTube, I went on Insta, I was on like Google, just looking at all these different people with this hair. And then I ordered it.
You was gonna find this weave.
And so I ordered it from the UK, and it, I forgot my confirmation, it's on the way. So I am going to, yes, bring this hair I found on Instagram. I've imported hair to get my hair done for my wedding because I'm black and I find hair on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, that was the perfect. I think that might have been the most perfect. That must have been the most perfect response to this question I've ever heard.
Thank you.
Is from the top to the bottom. Because ain't nothing black to tell people what you ain't about to do. It's come to this wedding.
With the same hair as me. No, not the same dress. We don't got to worry about the same dress. No, the same hair.
There's a lot of stuff I love about black folks, but I definitely love our what you not about to do energy. I just love that. That is one of my favorite things. You know, I think it's important because we're going to go deep and wide, like the old folks said. So we're having a conversation that I want to name is really tricky in the Black community, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of things that it feels like without, like, how to know you Black without saying you Black. Just some things we've learned how to not talk about publicly. So I want to name that today we are having a rich and robust conversation around theology, right? And so part of the reason why I have you on this call is because for you, at least for me, a lot of how I understand your commentary is that of public theology, right? Mm-hmm. And really kind of expanding our lexicon and our imaginations around what we name as the Black church, what we're naming as not the church, what we're naming as good religion, bad religion. And we've got to complicate that shit, right? And so today, that is what this conversation is centered on. And, you know, one of the things, and I don't think I've ever told you this, I'm quick to say church people are not my ministry. Okay. I say a lot of stuff.
Publicly. Actually, no, you have said that before.
I'm like, y'all go ahead.
He'll be like, go ahead with them.
Y'all go ahead and do God's work. Somebody need to do it. I ain't doing it. And so this is about as close as we gonna get to Kena doing this work out here. So let me start off. If I were to say to you, sis, does a Black theology exist in 2020?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, it does. I mean, Black people are out here living and breathing and surviving and thriving and, you know, musing about God and the divine. And I say divine and making that distinct from God, because like not everything is like centered around God in like in Black theologies, in the same way that every Black theology ain't Christian. Let's just put that one out there.
Well, I gotta get off the call. Well, this was a good
this is great. This is fun. Handshake.
5 minutes with all
but yeah, like, you know, whenever we're in a place of like considering like what is holy, like what is divine, like what is God or godly, however it is that we call that God, like we're doing the work of Black theologizing. But in terms of Black theology, I mean, it's a discipline, it's absolutely there. And it's really robust. We have like, you know, Black Christians and Jews and Buddhists and Muslims and, you know, folks who are adherents of traditional African religions who are doing like this deep work of considering the holy through the experience of being a Black person. Absolutely, Black theology is alive and it's well and it's good.
Let me just start being messy. We're going to start with being messy.
I mean, I'm here for it.
I grew up by way of the Holiness Church. This one of them episodes, I'm like, please don't listen to it, mama, you know, because there's some critique here. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in that, and I'm still unpacking it. I'm still reflecting. I'm still moving through it, right? Mm-hmm. But I grew up in a church where, you know, women didn't wear makeup, didn't wear mm-hmm. pants, that kind of thing. And it was we named ourselves as non-denominational, as holiness. So that's what I'm saying. It was mm-hmm. like the part of the holiness charismatic movement. Mm-hmm. And so much of my orientation to mm-hmm. my faith was from a place of, here are the things that Black people don't do, mm-hmm. right? Here are the things that Black people don't believe in. Mm-hmm. And so much of that was steeped in what I would call low frequency emotions, fear, mm-hmm. shame, embarrassment. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're at this point where some of us, when I ask that question, is there a Black theology, don't know how to see a theology that includes imagination or creativity. We just mm-hmm. know what it means to be scared or to be fearful. Like, theology to me means to have imagination and mm-hmm. to have fullness. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the Black church, by and large, capital C church, mm-hmm. has been a place that has always like promoted that mm-hmm. kind of imagination. Mm-hmm. Can you speak more to that?
I mean, I think, you know, this is an issue that we see in the Church Universal, and then specifically in the Black church. Like, yeah, there are always those who have been the imaginers, right? Like, there have always been those churches that have been rooted in creativity and like considering what human flourishing might be. And like, we're going back into, you know, the time of like, you know, slavery and in the antebellum South. I mean, I think about hush harbors, right? And like these profound spiritual communities that were there. And that some folks are like really trying to like do their best to continue to honor that lineage today. There's always been those communities that have existed, whether they've been named as like these places of respite or not. But I think, you know, at the same time, you also do have places that have been tempered by fear. And even like when imagination's been there, it's like, well, what are they imagining, right? Like, I think, cause that's also the thing that we have to talk about, because sometimes when people have imagination, they're just imagining power and seeing themselves like, you know, in seats of power. And that makes a difference in terms.
You gotta
of,
have like, to stop right there though.
Let's talk about it, right? Because, you know, think about, you know, I mean, like, you grew up holiness. I came up in the Missionary Baptist Church, right? Very, like, very, very Baptist, like, in my formative years.
I mean, and that finger, like, the finger, like,
the finger. Baptist. Look, for my 10th birthday, I got a tambourine. I was one of them. It was, and I requested it. Like,
can you still got some wrist?
The wrist action, I got the double clap. Like, it's a part of me. I just be like clapping, like doing that double clap on like random R&B songs, y'all. I'm churchy. Even in not being like in the place of like congregational settings anymore, I am churchy as hell. It's in my blood. Like, it's a part of my Blackness. But yeah, like, I think we need to talk about it. How for some people, like their imagining was about power and the things that they did to like engage creatively, honestly, were destructive for others in order to limit the power that like some folks would have in the church to see their own sort of power like increase, right? It's like the wrong form of like the increase decrease thing that the scriptures talk about, right? They wanted to see themselves increase, so they like employed subjugation and oppression to see others decrease. And that, dependent on the type of tradition you grew up with in the Black church, that could mean LGBTQ folks, it could mean women, it could be people who had disabilities, those who are, you know, neurodivergent, like the list goes on, children, elders, it just depends. But yeah, there are some people whose imagination was limited. And in those limitations, they try to pass things off to others. They try to pass the limits to others.
So I want to bring up something really specific. So I haven't watched, I don't think Fix My Life is a thing anymore. I don't believe she on TV no more. I don't know. I don't got time to be stupid. But I remember the episode. And I mean, honestly, it was probably the first episode I saw. So that's probably why it stays with me. Mm-hmm. But she was at a church in Shreveport. Mm-hmm. All right. Shreveport, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And the pastor there had, what do you call it? Extramarital affairs with congregants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had a wife on the pool and the pregnant girlfriends at the back of the church. It was that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And of course, and the only way Ayana could do it was very dramatic. She was like, kneel before your Lord. She had to kneel before the altar. Lord. repent, right? So it was so dramatic. But I remember thinking when I was watching that episode, the Black church is one of the first places that allowed Black men to actually be. It was a space where they could be men and not boys, right?
Absolutely.
If we're talking about a time period where Black folks had to make way for white men on the street, right? There, at jobs, you weren't given humanity or like adulthood, men, you know what I'm saying? The street, in public streets, on a bus. Mm-hmm. But here at the Black church, you could like stand erect as a man.
And got to even be an elder, like your elderhood was knowledge.
You got to be in hierarchy.
You had the power, you had privilege that could be enacted out. You had authority. And in many people's views, you had scripture given authority, which is for many Black folks, again, regardless of tradition, some of the highest authority, right? It's not just that it's people given, it's that it's God given according to the way that folks were translating the scriptures and continue to translate the scriptures if we're honest.
Have used that authority, like you said, to recreate dimensions of power that have disempowered other people that have created violence. So, can we speak to where the church has failed the Black community?
I mean, it's hard to talk about this with the Black church, right? Like, we talk in Church Universal and we bring in white folks in and talk about their complicity. That's a much easier conversation. But it's difficult because when we talk about like the Black church, you know, having its complications and failures, we still have to pinpoint the ways in which white supremacy is responsible for those things being what they are. Even in terms of what we just talking about, in terms of gender norms that get enacted in the church, like it goes back to the exercise of white supremacy out of the space. And so both in the church like of old and even the church today, when people are being, you know, dehumanized in the street and like, you know, their adulthood, their personhood are being challenged, the church in many ways, again, is a refuge and a place of power. And so it still is a place where people can assert their authority. And so, unfortunately, that means that, you know, sometimes those who have less social power outside the doors get shat upon, like in the church house. So, and I think a person who actually really, really does a good job of pointing this out is Candace Benbow in Red Lip Theology. I was just so moved and touched, and I told Candace as much about her speaking about her mother, and specifically speaking about, like, you know, what does it mean to be a single Black woman and a single mom in the church, and like what it meant for their family and the ways in which, you know, when there was time to see an exercise of power, right? Like, there's this portion in the book where Candace's mama sends her away from the church because they're looking for a pastor. And Miss Benbow was on the search committee. And people got really, really violent towards Candace as a child, right? Like, just saying all sorts of things that they shouldn't have about her parentage and about her mom and what have you. They were directing all of this anger towards a child and being like, spiritually and emotionally violent because her mother had power to determine who the next pastor was going to be there. And they wanted to see that power like seized for themselves. or diminished. And I think, you know, that's an example, like a really good example that Candace actually delves into, like quite vulnerably, about how this happens, like in, I'd say, still say modern church settings, because like, you still have these people out there talking Cash Money shit about like single moms as if they don't come from single parent households, right? And, you know, a lot of that comes, like, you can look backwards. You can look again, looking at the antebellum South and what it meant to come out of, like, enslavement and the intentional, like, ripping apart of families. Like, there's a precedence here. So, like, why are we playing these games? Like, why are we vilifying people for doing the best that they can in the situations that they find themselves? The same is true, you know, for folks, you know, who have addiction. I think that there are a lot of ways that the church can and should step it up there. I think, you know, the same is true for equity for LGBTQ folks, same gender loving folks, folks who are in same sex relationships, just like however it is that people name themselves, like within the Black church community, like there's room there. But again, it's like, all of this goes back to respectability of some sort. And like there's a lineage of oppression that gets us to a place where like these failures take place in our, in like in Black church spaces. And like, it's super important, I think, to look at, you know, folks like Dr. Chamora Lomax and like Black queer scholars who point to this, because without fail, they're all talking about like Victorian social mores that come out of the 19th century and respectability. And this is how all this like gendered, you know, like purity, like all this shit comes from the same place, all the same pot. And it's still white supremacy that's responsible.
Well, and it gets poured into our bowls. I was thinking, and goodness, before this call, I should have actually went back to that article that, it was an editorial, and I think it was in the New York Times that talked about, this is my cisgender, like, oh my gosh, I can't make a mistake here, energy, but talking about like the roles of Black queer folks in the church particularly, mm-hmm. and the different waves of violence. So for example, mm-hmm. like the erasure, not only just the erasure of Black queer identity, but mm-hmm. like completely ignoring some of the things that needed to be spoken to, for example, mm-hmm. like HIV and AIDS, right? Mm-hmm. Completely ignoring those things. And in some ways, I want to full stop there. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be lovingly involved in the body of love, mm-hmm. and having the very real things, those tendential things, those material things that affect your life, mm-hmm. get ignored, mm-hmm. right? And I wouldn't... Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that's just one example. I know.
Remember how I told you, like, there's always that community of imagination. It's not that the whole Black church forgot, though, because out of that pocket, out of that lack of care is where you have the Black queer church that came and stepped up for one another. And specifically, you know, the work of Black lesbians like Reverend Yvette Flunder or Bishop Yvette Flunder, forgive me. Like Bishop Flunder, like, is known, like, both in activist spaces as well as religious spaces for her HIV solidarity work. And like, you know, and what it meant to accompany folks both then and now. There are entire, like, you know, ministerial legacies that were, I don't want to say born, because that's not like they were there, but like people picked up the mantle, but it's in places of the marginalized church, even within the Black church, which itself is marginalized.
Thank you for bringing that up. I was going to say, you know, there was this moment after Trayvon Martin is murdered, mm-hmm. and it becomes really important for me as a Black person to find a church, mm-hmm. where people are talking about and speaking against mm-hmm. white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And it was hard, mm-hmm. right? Me being a Black woman, mm-hmm. finding a Black church, mm-hmm. where from the pulpit, people will say, this shit is bananas. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of what I'm naming as a failure too, mm-hmm. is this lack of public conversation. Because even if your pastor privately says, Yeah, you know them white people be doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But publicly doesn't speak out against police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
Publicly won't speak out against state-sanctioned violence. I like to think that I'm not the only Black person who has really struggled
mm-hmm.
to make that connection.
You're not. And I think that this now, it's so complex. Just from the little digital porch in which I sit and I do my little rocking back and forth.
My like, digital porch.
A little digital porch. Like what?
I love it.
One of the things that like I feel is like there's a couple of things that work here. A thing that the Black church has like been struggling with, and again, this is also in alignment with like other traditions, is the increasing influence of mega church culture, right? Like, and so I think that's some of why you don't hear this. Because mega church culture, like, let's call it what it is, by and large, not exclusively, but I think there's a fair amount of churches who fall under this would be evangelical in nature. And evangelicalism is like selfish. Like,
might as well call it white nationalism.
I mean, many threads of it are. And even those that would position themselves to be more progressive, there still is. The community interest, quote unquote, is like there's a way that respectability is upheld. And so you just have to like hold yourself a certain way. And like you just don't act this way with the police, right? That's some of the rhetoric that comes out of those spaces. But also the community that it's concerned with are the people who are within the walls. It's not without. And the only time that it's concerned with what's happening outside is like if it can engage in a paternalistic way. And so I think that that's part of what like we're seeing like in like this sort of era of like, you know, religious folks responding to things. But I think that this is where we have to have a complex conversation about what the Black church is, because there are Black ministers who be turning up in the streets and in the pulpit, but some of them are in mainline congregations.
Well, like I was about to say, some
United
of them.
United Church of Christ.
Okay.
And progressive United Methodist churches where they have resourcing and access to that lets them do that and not have them be put outside the church house. So it's messy.
Who's ready for some Black history?
This is your Black History Moment.
What is the latest Black history you've made? You are Black history. So what is the latest Black history you have made?
Oh, gosh.
How are you Black history?
How am I Black history?
How are you Black history?
I am Black history in being the first community cultivation curator for the Evolving Faith Conference. And for me, that's a really important thing to name because I basically, one, I made up that title and they let me. But
I think that's going to answer the second question.
But I have the opportunity to care for and imagine what it's like to care for folks who are asking questions about their faith. And it's around the world. Like, it's real dope. Like, because of our conference going digital with the pandemic, and it's continuing on with that this year, like literally when we would have like sessions and like do breakouts specifically in the BIPOC room, I mean, folks were calling in from like Kenya and the UK and the Philippines and Canada and like, you know, all throughout, you know, South, Central and North America. Like, it was just beautiful, like the community that exist. And like, you know, with me being elevated to this new role that they lately made up a name for, I have the opportunity to do that for the conference, like the whole conference, like do this work of imagining like what connection looks like beyond the scope of just our conference, and like how do people feel more cared for and loved and appreciated. Yeah,
that's awesome. And it is Black history. Let's talk about people who are saying, as a Black person, well, you know, I wanted to be like hashtag asking for a friend, but let's just keep it a buck. Asking for Kena. I ain't even gonna pretend. I ain't studying, right? So how does one say, because I think there's a void here, which is like, how do I get to say I need to go to a church where I can be authentic? And part of that is my this side of the mountain experience that I'm having, you know, this worldly experience that I'm having, I need to be in a space where people are speaking against white supremacy. I need to be in a space that is queer affirming. I need to be in a space that acknowledges climate, right? And what I have seen is if I can go to a church that is not sending queer people to hell, right? That's mostly a white congregation. So then it's anti-Black. But then if I go to a church that is naming race as a real thing or speaking of racism, they are a space that is not queer affirming. And so that struggle, like that's a real thing that I'm experiencing in real time. Like, okay, I can go where the Black people at, but now y'all hate that. Y'all, you know what I'm saying? You hate that. But then I could go where queer lives are affirmed and given power and authority in heaven and on earth. But now I gotta be the token Black person.
It to some degree it is picking and choosing because folks haven't necessarily prioritized intersectional equity where they are. And so they like kind of pick and stick a justice thing, right? So I, you know, recently worked with a congregation who shared that they wanted to be more racially equitable. And they had previously done work around LGBTQ equity. And I was like, so like getting in there, I was like, okay, so like, let's just off the bat complicate this because let me tell you how like these things go hand in hand. You can't talk about how you want to be racially just and then you've already achieved quote unquote justice for the LGBTQ community. Because the reality is if you're not thinking about the young, like Black trans woman or like young gay man who is more statistically, it's more probable that they'll be on the streets, then you're not actually doing LGBTQ equity work, nor are you doing racial justice work because like these things go hand in hand. And let's talk about how poverty comes into the mix. And then letting us talk about like disability. Like there's all of these things that are woven together and like justice, like you gotta be just, period. Because like all of these oppressions are interlocked and interwoven and they are in lockstep with one another. And so when you say that you're trying to do this and you're not considering all the ways that people are left out from that conversation, your justice is incomplete. And so, yeah, like what you're experiencing is super real, you know, and there are some churches that are like, you know, working to like get it right. Like I think about like the Good Neighbor movement down here in North Carolina, right? Like Brandon Rencher is somebody who I adore because B is someone who very much pays attention to and seeks to honor those hush harbors of our past and like is imagining what it means to bring that sort of like refuge into present day. And this is a predominantly Black church that is very heavily LGBTQ who doesn't even meet in traditional ways because they sew out in the streets. And there are places like all throughout the country that are doing things similar. And like, you know, and their makeup is different, but like you have, you know, organizations like Interfaith Power and Light who work super hard to help churches and other houses of worship throughout the country be more ecologically just. And to have conversations about like global warming and, you know, the impact of climate change and how that intersects with race and economics. And they do this all over the country. And so, you know, there are ways that folks are working to be faithful, like, and really be caring of like image bearers of God who have all different sorts of identities and experiences. It's just about finding the people. Like, that's really the thing. It's like, how do you find them? And the answer to some of this is the internet.
Look, I mean, I'm just waiting for you to open up a church of, I don't know what you're going to call it, but I would become a congregant real fast.
Like, everybody says that.
When will you be Pastor Alicia?
I mean, this is what my little Twitter is. You know, like these little micro sermons, get your shit together. Here's a verse, here's some lyrics, here's a funny, because that's also a way of doing church. And it's a way that for many of us who find ourselves outside of congregational spaces, like I'm just gonna keep it a buck. Like I've been to a lot of like different types of churches to the point where depending on the context, I'll either call myself ecumenical or ecumenically promiscuous. That's really what it is. Like I'm a church round the way girl. And that being seriously, I could call the roll in all the different types of churches I've been in, Tina.
So you could do the sit down, you know how to Baptist, put a blanket on, you know how to throw a blanket on somebody's lap.
Pentecostal, Nazarene, Methodist, you know. There's that time I was kicking it with the apostolics a little bit because I had a crush. Listen, I have been around. But that all being said, like my ecumenicism, like leads me to see the beauty in like in these different spaces and places, but also lets me know that that's not for me. It's like, I've been to enough types of churches through different denominational lenses with different polity and like different like ways of like moving and being and whatever. Like, that's not where the Spirit of God meets me. Not necessarily. Like not week in and week out. Like because of just what power looks like to me, what community looks like to me, my spirit is filled like in other ways. However, I still do think that like it's important to maintain those spaces for folks who like do get their best life, like hearing the Sunday sermon and, you know, and having certain types of fellowship that are like, you know, specific to these places. That's all well and good. And like, you know, more power. And like part of my ministerial work is like letting people know, like, yo, this thing that you want exists. It's just about connecting with it.
All right, last question here.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned red lipstick theology. We have God is a Black woman. There are a lot of Black women doing some amazing, having some amazing conversations.
Mm-hmm.
What significance do Black women, does womenism in general have? Like, how can that perspective mm-hmm. fill the needs that our community still has?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of the things to just think about, like the disciplines of like Black feminism and womanism, like I feel like these are two things more so than others where like folks don't get left behind, right? Like there is a community consciousness embedded into these disciplines. And not just disciplines, right? Because like you do have folks who do it in terms of study, but then you have other folks who are like about it and like in terms of the way they seek to live. And it changes the questions that people ask, specifically about like who's not being mentioned. I mean, like one of the works that I've like really come to love over the last few years is Dr. Will Gaffney's Womanist Midrash. And like this book is like so phenomenal because like, you know, all of these folks who would have gone unnamed otherwise, you know, get named, get like, you know, pointed to like through Dr. Gaffney's work, because she did the work of naming, because like that's a critical part of like womanism, is like naming the people whose names either kind of are cursorily uttered or like glossed over altogether. And, you know, womanism, as I've been taught, seeks to not leave those folks behind. But I think that this is also, you know, where you also like look at queer theologies, right? And Black queer theologies more specifically, because like, you know, shout out to like, you know, folks doing the work. Sometimes you need to throw the queer kids in the mix to ask different types of questions, like, you know, because queerness itself subverts. And so even though like, you know, womanism asks certain questions, and there are some, you know, some things where people could argue about like womanism and Black feminism, but like everybody doing the work ain't queer. And everybody, like when I say that queer, I mean like politically queer, like that's not everybody's agenda. It's just not. It's not the setup of who they are and like the commitments that they have. And so when you look at Black queer works, and quite frankly, you're going to find more of those outside of like published spaces, because Black queer kids are asking questions that other folks aren't. And, you know, there still is a degree of progress to be made within publishing, like highlighting and amplifying voices of folks who are like experiencing compounded marginalizations, like even more so than just looking at Black womanhood, right? Like there's work to be done around like Black disabled womanhood or Black queer womanhood, et cetera, et cetera. So all that being said, it's just like, you look to the fish sandwich heavens, you look to, you know, projects like the one that I'm working on, you look to Twitter, like honestly, and you'll see like shining examples of like folks whose work falls outside of the academy, outside of like the traditional bounds of the church. But like none of that, nonetheless, they're doing it. Like we're doing it. Like we out here. It's just about like, are we out here in ways where we're getting published? Not necessarily. I mean, some of us are working on that, raise his hand, but like that's not where everyone is and where everyone's gonna be, because like queerness, you know, bucks at certain things. And so, you know, you'll have people who don't care to get published, but they'll put out a zine in order to make sure that like, you know, things around justice and around faith are more accessible to folks, and they're free and they're, you know, widely distributable.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that's one of the ways that I would think about how I've always seen Black liberation. It's always subversive. It's always counterculture. I said I had one last question, but I was wrong. okay, so I try to be thoughtful because I'm just like, okay, we're, you know, some people like rather heaven is a real thing that they imagine or not. But just if you just play the game with me here,
okay, get to
heaven. Who the first person you trying to run it up with? Because I can tell you who the person is. I have a running list. Like the first person I want to meet is John the Baptist. Because I'm like,
okay, bro. So John is my muse. Like we're talking about
This is why we get along.
If we're talking about spiritual lineages, like John's my dude. Because let me explain. So John was a temple kid. I am a church kid. His daddy was a priest. My daddy's a minister. John was like, I'm gonna go hang out the river. I'm like, catch me outside. So like, there's all of this continuity like in this. And like, I just think you have to be a hell of like a person to be the forerunner to the gospel. Like John is that dude. And so he's at the top of my list. But if we're talking about like people all together, like when we like, you know, put on the sparkly robes, because like mine's gonna have a little bit of a shimmer to it, it's gonna be my grandma. Like,
aww.
I miss my gran so much. And like, there, like she passed in 2018, and there are all these like wild things that have happened in my life since then. And like, that's, I'm like, I'm looking forward to like seeing her and like other family members again, including like, you know, the four-legged ones. But yeah, like if we're talking about like when we all get to heaven, like all that, it's my grandma I want to see it. It's just like, did you see this? And did you see this? And then I did this. And then I learned this. Like, I want to just like sit and like just hang out with my buddy again. Like I miss like my mom. It's so funny. We were talking recently about stuff I would do with my grandma, and she just like really didn't realize stuff that we would do. Like my grandma was one of my drinking buddies. Like we'd be sitting there like making our little boozy smoothies, like fresh fruit yogurt and rum, like sharing cookies from like artisan bakeries. Like that was my ace. And so yes, Grandma, John the Baptist is close, but I'm going to stick with my grandma first.
That's good. I get that. I get that. I do. I appreciate that so much. And then all of the list of other ratchet folks, you know, because it was full of ratchet people. Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, I'll have neck tight knees in heaven. So
look now, I want to run it up with the people. Who was that woman who made her father-in-law sleep with her? She was like, look, you gonna take care of business, sir. Was that Tamar? Like, Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories. She's like, you ain't about to run that.
Don't play with me. Like, don't do it.
Thank you for being such a blessing in my life. Thanks for blessing our listeners.
Thanks for having me and for being my friend.
How they can learn from you, glean from you, buy you wedding gifts. Just give us all the information.
Okay, I mean, sure. I'll tell you all of it. So you can like learn from me and glean from me and just be in like digital community with me. by going on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, though I'm not on TikTok that much other than to watch the things that I send to Keenan. Twitter, what am I forgetting? Patreon. All of that is under Alicia T, as in Tom Crosby. So Alicia T. Crosby. And that's also my website, aliciatcrosby.com. And so you'll be able to like look at all of those things and see what I'm up to. And if you want to buy me wedding gifts, I will not stop you because my wedding gifts are really just money. My fiance and I are both in our mid-30s, and we're like, we have a house full of stuff that we're still trying to get rid of. You know what we need? Cash, so we can like, you know, have experiences. But yeah, like look me up on the Knot, but also on my social media. Very soon I'm going to be posting info for not just how to support us as we get married, but also how to like tune into our wedding. Like we know that Black love and Black queer love are really special things to behold. And so yeah, we're getting our little YouTube together. That way folks all around the world, because folks all around the world have like said, we want to see. And so we're making that available to like, yes, our friends and family who are going to be in person and our communities of care, but also like to folks who have just been praying us through these last 3 years.
Yeah. You stay good. You stay well. And I'll talk to you later.
Sis. Bye.
Bye, friend.